Rashi, the beginning of the Sedra, is bothered by the question. It says, "Vayelo, I love Hashem," but it doesn't say that he said anything to him. Immediately, Avraham Avinu sees these three people, runs to them. So what did the Rebbe exactly come to say to him or whatever? So Rashi says that he didn't come to say anything. He came Levakir the Sacholder. He came to visit him since this was the third day after his bris. That's how Rashi learns. And he was still sick, weak. So Kodesh Baruch Hu came to teach us the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. The Rambam learns differently. He says that whenever someone sees angels, you can't see them with your physical eyes. And they are all seen in a prophetic vision. Other Rishonim have problems with that because there are those that saw angels that were not prophets, like Hagar, Lot. So they modify that. You don't have to be a prophet to see it, but the Rebbe Mishom has to give you special vision. It's a different kind of vision. And therefore, the Rambam says that none of this really happened in the physical world. It all was a prophetic vision that Avraham Avinu saw. The whole union with the Malachim and feeding them or whatever was all done in a prophetic vision. The Ramban argues on that, but that's what the Ramban says. And that's why Vayelo Alav Hashem, he appeared to him and bestowed upon him this prophetic vision of the whole Maisa with the angels. The Sforno says something different. He says that this was the day of the bris itself. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to come, kibiyochol, to be present at the bris, since a bris means a covenant, an agreement. An agreement has to be between two sides, and both sides have to be represented. So the Rebbe Mishom had to come to represent his side of this bris. And the Sforno says, that's why at every bris, we have an empty chair that represents the Shechinah. This concept of a chair, an empty chair, and something that's spiritual, that comes into this world, needs a place, something for it to take, to connect to. Can't just have spiritual things floating around in this world. They have to have some physical connection. So sometimes it could be a kos, is also a receptacle, or a kisei, a chair. That's why it says in the Gemara that when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was dying, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi or Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I think. No, it was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He said, bring a chair for Chizkiyo HaMelech, who's coming to greet me. His ancestor is coming to greet him. So the chair was there to give the Neshama some connection, physical connection in this world. So he says, in order to represent the Shechinah, you need an empty chair. Now we have at a bris a chair, but it's not a chair for the Shechinah. It's a chair for Eliyahu HaNavi, Kisei Shel Eliyahu. But there's no contradiction. Because the Medrash says that when Eliyahu HaNavi, exasperated, came to the Ribono Shel Olam on Har Sinai, after Izebel sent him a message that she's going to kill him, after the Maisa with the 450 Nevi'ei Habal, which, by the way, I'll tell you a nice voice that I heard in the name of Yaakov Weinberg, Zatzal, the former Rosh Yeshiva in Ner Yisrael in Baltimore. he asked the following question. It says that after Eliyahu Navi was successful in proving Hashem Hu Elokim, people saw that God is true and the Baal is false. The fire came down min Hashemayim and consumed his sacrifice and not the Baal sacrifice. And the people were convinced that the Rabban Shalom is true and that they killed the 450 Nevi'ei HaBaal. So he gets home and he finds a messenger there. And the messenger says, Izebel has sent me to tell you that tomorrow she's going to kill you. And Eliyahu can't take it. He runs away into the desert. He, runs eventually to Har Sinai. And the Rabban Shem says to him, what are you doing here, Eliyahu? And he says, Kano kinesi lashem. I have tremendous kanos for the Rabban Shem, tremendous zeal. Ki avru es b'risecha, Klal Yisrael have not kept their bris with you. And they did terrible things, and they're terrible people, and I can't take it anymore. And the Rabban Shem then shows him an earthquake and a storm and a still small voice hinting to him that you don't get anywhere with loud screaming and shouting or whatever. The answer is go back to them and give them nice, quiet mussar, and it'll affect them. And after he gives them a time to think about this, he asks Eliyahu again, Malach HaPo Eliyahu, what are you doing here? And he tells him the same thing again. I can't take it. I'm zealous for your honor. Klal Yisrael have transgressed your bris, and I can't take it. The Rosh Hashanah says, fine, you can't be the leader anymore. You're going to be taken away. Go and make Elisha the prophet and appoint a king and for Aram, and you have to be taken away. And eventually, right after that, Eliyahu was taken in a fiery chariot, L'shamayim. Okay. So Rabbi Weinberg asked the following question. He said, Izebel has been trying to kill Eliyahu her whole life. She's been his nemesis the whole life. Why now does it bother him so much? And secondly, if you want to kill somebody, you don't usually send them a message, I'd like to kill you tomorrow, could you be in this and this place? Like you try to surprise them. Like you don't send them a message, you're going to kill them tomorrow. So he said the following. He said what Izebel was telling Eliyahu was the following. Today I won't be able to touch you. If I touched you today, the people would tear me limb from limb, because you're the hero, you prove to them that there's a God, you're God's representative, the Baal is false. But it won't take too long till the effects wear off. And tomorrow I will kill you, and they'll let me. And he knew she was right, that the effects wouldn't last too long. Miracles don't accomplish too much, and they wear off very quickly. That's not why we believe in the Rabban Shalom, because of miracles that happen. They're very nice, and they accomplish something for the moment, but they wear off. And we all knew that she was right. All that he accomplished was very short-lived, and by the next day, if she wanted to kill him, they'd let her. So he ran away, couldn't take it anymore. In any case, that wasn't what I wanted to speak about. So he comes to the Rabban Shalom, he says, Klal Yisrael are terrible people, Ozvu es b'secha. So the Rabban Shalom told him the following. You are going to have to attest that every eight-day-old Jewish baby is fit to be in the bris, and they do keep the bris. So you're going to have to go to every bris and attest to the fact that what you said is not true. Ozvu es b'secha, the Jewish people are not bad people. They can do bad things. They're not bad people. And they basically, intrinsically are good. L'haraya, every eight-day child has a kesher with me. They start off fine. And deep down, they are kodesh v'tahor. And you're going to have to attest to that. So the Rabban Shem sent Eliyahu as his shliach. He's his agent. So really, Eliyahu represents God's part of the bris. Like the Sfarno says, every bris is a two-sided agreement. And both sides have to be represented. So the Rabban Shem had to come to the bris. But from the time of Eliyahu and on, he said Eliyahu as his representative. So the kisei became the kisei shel Eliyahu, not necessarily the kisei for the shina. With that, I wanted to answer a question which everybody asked. If Avraham Avinu kept the Torah before it was given, Why didn't he give himself a bris before he was 99 years old? Why did he wait till 99? So there are many, many answers to that question. Amongst them, since he could only have a bris once, he wanted to wait until he was commanded. He knew that eventually the Rambam was going to command it, because he knew the whole Torah. And he knew this mitzvah is going to get commanded. It's better to do a mitzvah when you're commanded than when you're not commanded. And since he can only do it once, he waited to do it after the command. That's one answer. Another answer they say is that Avraham Avinu did not keep the whole Torah until after his bris. So there's no question anymore. A third answer they say is that a Ben Noach is not allowed to wound himself unnecessarily. And if there's no mitzvah to have a bris milah, it's unnecessary wounding, which is prohibited to a Ben Noach, and Avraham Avinu had to keep that. So he wasn't allowed to do a bris until the Rebbe Shem told him he had to do it. I want to say a different answer based on this Sforno. And that is, you can take Esrog and Lulav before you're commanded, you can blow shofar before you're commanded, you can wear tzitzis and tefillin before you're commanded. But bris milah is a bris. A bris means it's an agreement between two sides, like the Sforno said. You can't have a one-sided bris. You can't say, I'm entering into a bris with the Rebbe Shalom unless he wants to enter into that bris. You can't have a voluntary bris whether it's one-sided. A bris is an agreement. An agreement has to have two sides. So until the Rebbe Shalom commanded Avram and showed his willingness to enter into this covenant, into this bris, there's no bris. Then bris milah is not a bris, it's just an operation. And there's no mitzvah in that. The mitzvah is only if it represents a covenant between two sides. But if one side is not involved, then there's no such thing as a bris. It's impossible to keep bris milah voluntarily before there was a command where God said, I want to enter into this covenant. Okay, go to the next thing. Any questions about that? Okay, I don't remember if last week we spoke about the give and take of chesed, when giving or taking can be chesed. We speak about that? No? Good. I'm going to speak about it now. Avraham Avinu, yes. No. He didn't keep the whole Torah until after his bris. In other words, that which it says that Avraham Avinu kept the Torah before it was given was only after he had a bris.
Oh, he didn't know that.
Right. He didn't keep the Torah before he had a bris. So there's no question. But that's a little bit difficult because the Midrashim say not like that. The Midrashim say on the Pasuk in Parshas Toldos, Ekev asher shoma Avraham bekoli. Ekev means 172 years, Avraham Avinu listened to me and kept my Torah. That was from the time he was 3 years old and old, and older, because he lived 175. According to that medrash, that's not true, that he didn't keep the Torah till his bris. He kept the Torah from the time he was 3 years old. Okay. Avraham Avinu sees these three guests who he thinks are people, and he begs them to come to his house, where he prepares a banquet for them, and he seats them under a tree to eat. And I would think that if I brought guests home and had a beautiful house, okay, very spacious, airy, okay, doors on all sides, and I left my guests outside under a tree, my wife would have my head. What in the world are you doing? What kind of host are you? You're leaving these people outside. Bring them in and treat them with respect and honor and be a good host. So maybe Avraham Avinu did something wrong. I mean, Chazal say that the things that he served the guests directly, personally, God rewarded us personally. And the things he did through a shliach, through Yishmael, God gave us in the desert through a shliach. Okay, so So what's it called? Maybe he didn't do what it was right. Maybe he should have brought them in. But the Medrash says not like that. The Medrash says that in the Schus, that Avram Avinu fed these people under the tree, we got the mitzvah of Sukkah. That means feeding them under the tree was something special. That merited an extra mitzvah for his children, similar to the tree, the Indian of Sukkah. So why? Doesn't it seem like that's not the epitome of chesed, leaving your guests outside under a tree? In order to answer this, I want to broaden the question. You're all familiar with the Kuntres HaChesed of the Mishnah Eliyahu, I'm sure. In any case, you're familiar at least with one part of it, I'm going to tell you, one line, that you've heard many times, I'm sure. And that is that there are two kinds of people in this world. There are givers and there's takers. And a person should always strive to be a giver and not a taker. That you heard, I'm sure. Okay. The only thing is, if you think about it, it's absurd. Because if everybody strives to be givers, who are they going to give to? So there's got to be at least one token taker to be able to make everybody else givers. So not everybody can be a giver. Some people are going to have to take. So we need a volunteer to be the taker, right, in order to let everybody else give. The answer to that question is that giving and taking is not necessarily the one who gives out is the giver. And the one who receives is the taker. Sometimes the one who receives is the giver, and the one who gives out is the taker. How so? Let me mark him another question, and then we'll start giving all the answers to these things. Avraham Avinu, last week's Sedra says, I won't take a penny, not a shoelace from Melech Sodom, and no one should say they made me rich. Okay? God makes me rich, not Melech Sodom. And here, Avraham Avinu is the epitome of chesed. Chesed is giving, not taking. So Avraham Avinu won't take from Melech Sodom. And Avraham Avinu did a good job of taking from other people. He took from Paro, he took from Avimelech, and he took from Malki Tzedek in last week's Sedra. So, which is it? Avraham Avinu is a giver or a taker? Out of four times, right, in this week's Sedra, he took from Avimelech. Last week's Sedra, he took from Paro and Malki Tzedek, and according to one opinion, that Malki Tzedek gave him Miser. And he didn't take from Melech Sodom. So out of four times, three times he took. That makes him a giver. Therefore, what we have to understand is, because Avraham Avinu received things does not mean that he's a taker. Taking and giving is much deeper than who is receiving and who's giving out. It's possible for a person to receive and be a giver, and to give out and be a taker. Let's discuss the situations where a person can take, but he's really giving. And then we'll come back to what we started with, where it's possible to appear to be a giver and really you're a taker. See the other person. One situation where a person can take, but can still be considered a giver, is where he takes in order to give. He doesn't have the wherewithal to give anything to anybody unless you take things. If you don't work and take your wages, you're not going to be able to give tzedakah or do chesed. If you don't have money to buy a house, you're not going to be able to do what they call hachnas tzorchi, and so on and so on. People need things to be able to do things with them. You can't give something you don't have. So you have to have it first. In order to have things, you have to take them. The Rabbanu Shalom promised Avraham Avinu that he would make him rich. Comes into a situation where Paro does something very not nice, takes his wife, and offers him presents. Avraham Avinu says, I think this is the way that God is making me rich. And I need to take this because I need to give to others. More certainly, not just do chesed and give other people presents, but it says that when Avraham Avinu came to Mitzrayim, he had nothing. Zero. and he had to stay in the inns that he stayed in on credit. He owed money for food, for lodging. He had a whole household to take care of. He didn't have the luxury of saying, I don't take from anybody, because here he saw that Rabbeinu Shalom is sending him what he promised him, and he's giving him the wherewithal to pay his debts and to give to others. Taking in order to give is basically giving. And Avraham Avinu understood that when the Rabbeinu Shalom said he's going to make him rich, he could do it any way he wants. There's a famous joke of a person in one of these recent floods in America. So the flood waters already came up to the top of the window, so he got up on the roof. And the waters are rising and rising. And he says, Rabbeinu Shalom, please save me. And as he's davening, a boat comes by, a rowboat with two people in it. He said, we have room for one more person, jump in. The guy says, no, God is going to save me. Nope. The boat goes away, the water is getting higher and higher, finally it's up to his neck. A helicopter comes over and sees him on the roof and says, puts down a ladder and says, get on. He says, no, God's going to save me. An hour later, the water goes over his head, he drowns. His neshama goes to the Beis Din Shomala. He comes before God and he says, God, how come you didn't save me? He says, I sent you a boat and a helicopter. What else do you want me to do? The Rabbeinu Shalom saving him means that he's going to create the means for him to heaven. So if the Rabbeinu Shalom said he's going to make him rich, he didn't necessarily mean to send him parachutes with money. He's going to see to it that circumstances arise where people are going to make him rich. I remember the Alter Satmar Rebbe. When I was a teenager, he used to spend his winters in Miami. And I remember watching one day him, people would come in for brachas with kvitlach, and he had a lot of very wealthy chassidim. So they gave him a lot of money. He had a beautiful flowered robe with big pockets, and they were stuffed with money. Not $1 bills either, $100 bills. So I said to myself, I think when I grow up, I want to be a Rebbe. This is a great great business. And then I saw that poor people came to him with their tzoras. He would reach into the pocket, not even look to see what he's taking, take a handful of bills, give it to them, till his pockets were empty. Then other people came in and filled his pockets. Then he emptied them. Did he say he was a taker? No. He didn't have his own money. People came. They wanted whatever. They willingly gave it, and this way he had money to give to other people. He was a clearinghouse. He wasn't taking. He was basically giving. I once wanted to explain, that's why Lev Tov, a good heart, according to some, is a symbol of chesed. Because the heart gives out to the body. But if you learn biology, you know that the heart takes in as much blood as it gives out. Right? The veins send the blood back to the heart, and the lower chambers of the heart take in the blood from the body, and the upper chambers, one sends it to the, what's it called, to the lungs, and then back to the heart, and then to the body. So the heart is taking in as much blood as it gives out. Why is it a giver? It's as much a taker as a giver. The answer is very simple. The blood the heart takes in from the body is not for itself. The supply of blood for the heart is the veins and arteries that are on the surface of the heart. But what goes into the chambers of the heart is not for the sake of the heart. It takes back unoxygenated blood to send it to the lungs and oxygenate it, and then send the oxygenated blood to the body. So the heart basically is a giver. Except in order to be able to send the blood to the body, it's got to take the blood back from the rest of the body. But it's taking in order to give. So one possibility where taking can be considered giving is where you take in order to give. And that's why Avraham Avinu took from Paro. He saw that this is the way the Rabbeinu Shalom is enabling him to have what to give. Next possibility. The next possibility is based on a Gemara in Kedushin. In order to effect a marriage, a man has to give a woman something, a value. At least a shavah pruta, the minig is to give a ring. Don't give anything. and say Haleat Mekudeshesli in front of witnesses, and she's married. What if the woman gives the man something and says Haleat Mekudeshesli, or even if he says Haleat Mekudeshesli with what you gave me, still marriage. Marriage is ki yikach ish isha. Man has to take a woman. He has to be the giver. She can't give, she receives. There is a case, the Gemara says, where a woman can give something to a man, and he says, with what you gave me, I am marrying you, and it's a good marriage. What's the case? Adam Chashuv, a very important person. The Gemara says there are certain people that people vie to give presents to. Presidents, kings. Right? I want the covet of this king taking my present. It doesn't take from everybody. I'm willing to spend money and pay somebody to convince the king to take my present. It's worth money that king takes my present. I'm willing to spend money on it. So if a woman comes to a very important man and she says, I'm giving you this present, and the man says, with the enjoyment you got that I accepted your present, I want to marry you. It's a good marriage. Because she's giving him the present, but he's giving her the enjoyment of accepting the present because he doesn't accept it from everybody. And she would be willing to spend money and pay somebody to convince him to take the present under normal circumstances. So there's something here that he's giving her. Even though she is giving him the present, he's giving her the honor of accepting it. When I first became a rabbi in Miami, I was very young, and I decided that I'm going to be a big avid, and I'm not taking anything from anybody. I get a salary, and that's it. I'm not taking any money by Mechilas Chametz, or people come back from Eretz Yisrael, and they bring the rabbi a present. I'm not taking any presents. Zero. Purim people like to give the rabbi presents. Zero. Made up my mind that I'm not going to do that. And this went on for about 5-6 weeks. Some people came back from Eretz Yisrael after Yom Noraim, and they offered me some presents they bought, and I said, I'm sorry, but my policy is not to accept any presents. This went on until one of my elderly balabatim came to me and said, Rabbi, you'll excuse me, but I'm going to be very blunt with you. You think you're a big tzaddik not taking presents from people, but you're insulting these people. They want to give you, it's an honor for them to give you a present, and you're telling them your presents don't mean anything to me. You are insulting these people. Take it. You don't want to use it. You want to give it to somebody else. It's your business. Take the present. Give the person the honor. You didn't have to convince me too much. From then on, I took presents. But he's right. Sometimes the person who gives really is the one who's taking. He wants the honor. And the person who's taking it may not want the thing per se, but I want to give you that honor that I will take something from you, that I show you that your presence is important enough for me, right, for me to receive it and not to reject it. So the second kind of taking that's giving is to give honor to the person who gave it. That's why Avraham Avinu took from Abimelech. Abimelech did something that he was very embarrassed, taking Sarah. Abimelech was a tzaddik, and this was really out of character. And he really felt bad. And he wanted to cover up by giving Sarah a present and Avram that they would take and show that, like, you know, let's bury the hatchet, let bygones be bygones. We don't hold any grudges against you for what you did. We understand that you misunderstood the situation. If Avram would have rejected the present, it would have been an insult to Abimelech. Abimelech was looking for the covet of showing that Avram didn't hold any grudges against him. So Avram took it to honor Abimelech, not because he wanted the present. So in that situation is that he took it in order to honor the other person by taking it. There's a third possibility, and this is perhaps the most important vis-a-vis yourselves. In every relationship, there is the person who gives in the relationship and the person who takes. And in a relationship of a marriage, Jewish marriage at least, most of the time, the Jewish mother, Jewish wife, loves to be a martyr. In other words, she doesn't like to take anything. She likes to be the giver. It's like in her genes. The Jewish women, Jewish mothers, like if there's a ton of food and you have three people at the table, father, mother, and a little child, the mother says, oh, no, I can't eat. Give it to my child. What do you give it to your child? Feed an army with the food. Your child is not going to starve if you eat. But that's a Jewish mother, right? No, my child. A Jewish mother and wife usually likes to be a martyr. And that's very nice. She never wants to take. She always wants to be the giver. There's only one problem with that. If in a relationship one side is always the giver, then the other side is always the taker. And that's very demeaning. So sometimes you have to take from somebody to enable them to be a giver. Because it is demeaning to put somebody in a situation where they're always taking and never have the chance to give. So a mother should be able to afford her children the ability to give too to her. That they should feel that feeling of what it means to be a giver. That respect of being a giver, not just a taker. The same thing with her husband. So the third kind of giving, of taking, that's giving, is when you take to enable the other person to give. That's why Avraham Avinu took from Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek, according to some Rishonim, wanted to give Meiser to Avraham Avinu. And if Avraham didn't take it, there was no other Kohanim in the world. There was nobody to give it to. So in order to enable Malki Tzedek to give Meiser, Avraham took it. So he gave to Avimelech, to Malki Tzedek, the opportunity to give. That's also called giving. But he did it by taking. That's why it says, Sonei Matanos Yichya. Person who hates Matanos will live. It doesn't say a person who doesn't take Matanos will live. You can take them. You have to hate the idea of taking. And if you take it already, take it for the reasons that I said, that sometimes taking is actually giving. Now let's go to the other side. Where could giving be taken? Let me give you two examples. You go visit somebody in the hospital. And you spend money, time. You finally get to the hospital. You walk to the room where the sick person is, and they're asleep. Now that is really a chutzpah. I spent this money and time to come to visit you, and you're asleep. Now, one of the hardest things to do when you're in the hospital is sleep. Okay, my wife used to tell me that when she was there having babies, right, they used to wake her up to take sleeping pills so she could go to sleep. She finally got to sleep, leave me sleep. So very difficult to get to sleep when you're sick and you're in the hospital. And somebody who's sleeping, usually, there are exceptions to the rule, like every rule, usually would rather sleep than visit with people. So you came to do your mitzvah. Right? You're the giver. You want to give this person a visit because they're sick, but they're asleep. So if you are refined, you send in the nurse to see if they're really asleep, meaning wake them up, I'm here. If you're not so refined, you walk into the room, knock over a chair, the person wakes up from the noise and says, and you say, oh, I didn't mean to wake you. You didn't mean to wake them. Right? You just don't want them to know that because I'm here. Now, in that situation, who is the giver and who is the taker? Okay? It appears that the person coming to visit the sick person is the giver. And the sick person is the taker, but it's not really true. The sick person is enabling the person who's visiting to have a mitzvah. The person who's visiting is using the sick person to get a mitzvah. So he's the taker, and the sick person's the giver. Give me another example. Since tomorrow night I am leaving to the States, I hope that this example does not become true. It hasn't been true for years and years. I usually have people that I go to that understand what it means to be a real host. But I remember one time, I went to Chutz La'aretz years ago to somebody I didn't know. And when you make an 11-hour plane trip, there is one thing you want when you land, a bed to sleep. Okay. Usually can't sleep on a plane and you have a busy schedule the next day and usually want to lie down. So, but a person wants to be a good host. What host sends his guest to sleep? So these people provide, what's it called, came in late at night, and they made a banquet for me. The last thing in the world I was interested in doing is eating. But, you know, these people went out of their way to host me, so I had to be a good guest. And so I sat by the banquet, and now what good guest just feeds his guest without striking up conversation for at least an hour or two? So I sat there and tried to listen to the conversation, even though I had to put toothpicks in my eyelids to keep them open. In that situation, who was the giver and who was the taker? It appeared like the host was the giver and I was the taker. But in fact, right, I was going out of my way to enable them to be a host. So I was really the giver and they were really the taker. Right? They were using me to be able to get the mitzvah of Achnas HaSosha. That was Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu sees three people in a rush. And he begs them to come to his house. He wants him to kind of mix with Achnas HaSosha. Why is he making Achnas? For their sake or for his sake? If it's for his sake, he wants to be a good host. Doesn't leave him outside under a tree. Brings him inside. But for their sake, when you're in a rush, you have to make a plane. You have somebody waiting to pick you up. You have an appointment to make. And somebody says, oh, just stop at my house for a minute. That's it. You know you're stuck. You can't just pick yourself up and leave somebody's house. It's not nice. So you're stuck, and you're always looking at your watch. I'm going to miss my appointment. I'm going to miss my plane. So it's very uncomfortable to be invited into somebody's house when you're in a rush. So Avraham Avinu said to the following. If you people are really in a rush, and that's why in the beginning you didn't want to come to me, I had to convince you, then I'm not going to make you feel uncomfortable. I'm not going to bring you to my house. Sit under the tree. I'm going to have a fast meal of milchiks. Here's butter and milk, everything prepared easily. Eat and run. You don't have to feel at all apprehensive. You're in a rush. I'm not bringing you to my house. You can just leave my yard and go whenever you want, and there's a ready prepared meal of milchiks. But if you're not really in a rush, you just said that because you didn't want to bother me, and you really have plenty of time, then we're preparing a nice basic meal for you. It's going to take much more time, and you can stick around, and if you're not in a rush and you're more hungry than you are in a rush, stick around for the basic. That's why Avraham Avinu offered the milchiks and basics, and why he left them outside, because he wanted to accommodate his giving to their needs, so he'd be a real giver and not manipulate them and use them so he could be a good host. And that's why we got the mitzvah of Sukkah. Because Baruch Hu surrounded us with Anoni HaKavod. But a Jew still feels comfortable looking at walls and at least Schach on the roof. Right? Anoni HaKavod, that's very nice, but it doesn't feel like I'm in a house. Don't make me feel comfortable. So because Avraham Avinu was able to accommodate the needs of his guests, not his need to be a good host, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accommodated our needs, that he gave us mamash sukkahs also, not only Anoni HaKavod. But that's how it's possible to be a giver, but really you're a taker because you're not accommodating what you're giving to the needs of the person, but accommodating it to your needs to be able to be a good host, to have your mitzvah, bikur cholim, or achnosis orchim, or whatever. Any questions on that? No, with the next one. Okay, next. Sorry, Nainu hears that she's going to have a baby, and she laughs. But Kitzchak Sora Bekir Boleimor Achri Blosi Isoli Edna Vadonizo came. After I have no longer a young woman who is capable of having children, I'm going to have children. Now that my husband's also old. And the Rabbanu Shalom gives a Musaru Avram, and he tells him, Lama zet socha ko Sora, why did Sora laugh? Hayipoli me'ashem davar. If you look back in the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, when Avram Avinu was told that he's going to have a son, he also laughed. He says, by Yitzchak Avram, and that's why he's called Yitzchak. And Avram gets no Moshe. Moshe doesn't say a word to him. Sarah, she gets Moshe. Why? Why when Sarah laughed, there's a problem, and when Avram laughed, there's no problem? So there are many answers to that question. I'm going to give you an array of some of them. One answer, they say, is there's two kinds of laughing. There's laughing out of happiness, and there's laughing out of, I don't believe it, you're pulling my leg. It's incredulous, right? You're making fun of it. When Avram Avinu laughed, it says, Bechadi, he laughed, he was ecstatic. He laughed out of joy. Nothing to give him Moshe. When Sarah laughed, she laughed out of, this is incredulous, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm going to have a kid now, 90 years old, my husband's 99, now we're going to have kids. So therefore, she got the Moshe. That's one answer. And that's why you can understand why when Sarah was confronted by Avram, who, when the Rabban Shem said, she said, I didn't laugh. I didn't laugh. How could you lie? Is it she laughed or she didn't? No, she felt that the laugh was joy, not out of being, you know, out of being skeptical. But the Rabban Shem said, no, I sensed in your laugh, it wasn't only joy, it was skepticism also. But then you could be very not so clear what the laugh is all about. So Sarah denied laughing, that kind of laugh, that was a problem. She felt she laughed the same kind of laugh that Avram did. No. Next possible answer. Avram Avinu was told by the Rabban Shem he's going to have a child. Okay? So he laughed. Oh, 1 second, we'll get to it makes the question even stronger. Avram Avinu is told by the Rabban Shem he's going to have a child, and he laughs. Sarah is told by 3 Arabs she's going to have a child, and she laughs. Where is the question bigger? Like, the laughing a problem? I've heard by Avram Avinu. God told him. And you're laughing at it? And Sarah, 3 Arabs told her. So she has a right to laugh. In fact, the Ramban says, she thought these were 3 Arabs. I mean, you come to a house of 2 elderly people. One's 90 and one is 99. They haven't had children, right, together, right, for all these years. And you're very happy. You want to give your host a bracha. What's the bracha you give to these people? Oh, Mir Sashem, you should have a child next year. I mean, let's, you know, give me a bracha that could be alive next year. Maybe that's the bracha to give these kind of people. Right? Shouldn't, what's it called, lose your eyesight, get a heart attack, whatever. That's the kind of bracha you give a 99-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman. You don't give a bracha, oh, Mir Sashem, next year you should have a kid. So Sarah laughed. It is absurd. Says the Ramban, what should she have done? I mean, it is a little absurd to get a bracha from 3 Arabs, right, that you're going to have a kid when you're 99 and 90. So she should have said, halavai, amen. From your mouth to God's ears. That's what she should have said. Nothing's impossible. So she should have had emunah that it could happen. But Avram Avinu heard it directly from the Rabban Shalom. So they say that, yeah, Avram Avinu heard it from the Rabban Shalom, but he didn't see anything yet that indicated that was going to happen. Sarah saw that she became young again, started having her period again that day. And a nace happened. The 90-year-old woman, and all of a sudden she becomes young. So, and she said, Achrei belosi hoysali edna. True, I'm young again. But Adoniz came. My husband's still old. And therefore, since she saw the miracle start already, there her laughter was more of a problem. That's what some say. The others say, Avram Avinu laughed between him and God. Sarah laughed, Bekirba Bekrovo Seha. She laughed amongst her friends with a Bekrovo Hashem. She made a bad, influence, bad example to others. So Avram, the Rabban Shem, let it go. Another answer they say is that Enochinami, the Rabban Shem, was giving Avram Moshe. Why didn't he speak to Sarah directly? There are many answers to that. He told Avram, how come Sarah laughed? sometimes the Baal Shem Tov says, I don't think he says it over here, but he says it in general. Sometimes a person does a chait, and he doesn't really realize what's wrong. So the Rav Amram lets him see somebody else do the same thing, and then he tells the person, you see what that person did, and the person judges that other person, because when you see it on yourself, you ignore it or justify it, but when you see it by somebody else, you see it the way it really is. So the Rav Amram let Avram see Sarah laugh, told him, and he really laughed, and he gave him the mussar now, because before Avram would have said, no, it's not just like Sarah said. But now that he saw it by Sarah, he could realize that what he did deserved the mussar. Because now it's talking about somebody else, not him. And Sarah herself also said, not true, I didn't, and laughed like that. And she really meant it. But the Rebbeim said, no, I saw differently. So when he wanted to give mussar to Avram, and he give it to him then, directly, he would have also said, it's not true, I didn't really mean it like that. So now he saw it by Sarah. That's when the Rebbeim gave him the mussar. Okay. Next. So we'll do one more thing. Avraham Avinu davens for Sodom. And 45, 50, 45, 40, 30, 20. Why did Rebbeim Shem let him waste his time? He knew that there weren't 10 tzaddikim. The Rebbeim Shem didn't come along and say, I'm going to destroy Sodom. And Avraham said, yeah, but what if there's 50 tzaddikim? He said, oh, good point. Let me go see if there's 50 tzaddikim. God comes back and says, hey, there's not 50 tzaddikim. Well, how about 45? The Rebbeim Shem didn't decide to destroy Sodom until he knew all the details, obviously. He didn't have to go check either. So obviously, if he's going to destroy Sodom, there aren't 10 tzaddikim. So what in the world is he letting Avraham, first of all, waste his time? I know that there's not. I see where you're going. Tell him, look, Avraham, you have better things to do. There aren't 10 tzaddikim. I decided this. And what's Avraham davening altogether? Did you think God has made a decision and he didn't take these things into consideration? He's got to tell us. There are two ways of answering it. One, the Maral Diskin says, and I'll tell you a maisa that goes with it. We'll do this quickly. The Maral Diskin was the Rav of Yerushalayim. Together with Shmuel Salant. So before Rabbi Yosef Chaim was on him. So he's called the Brisker Rav. He was originally Rav in Brisk, and he was Rabbi Yeshua Leib Diskin. He says like this, but I'll tell you Maisa first. When my Rosh Yeshiva, Boris Sorotskin, was dying, the last 2 weeks of his life, his wife, Alea Shalom, was the principal of Yavne High School in Cleveland. And the girls came and volunteered to make shifts around the clock saying Tillim for her husband. So for the last 2 weeks of his life, they said Tillim 24 hours a day in shifts. And he died. She called the girls together during the shiva. And she said, you probably are wondering, how come your tefillahs didn't help? 24 hours a day for 2 weeks, so much Tillim. And my husband died. She said, Chas v'Shalom, your tefillahs helped. They may not have helped the way that we would have liked them to help, but maybe they helped my husband's neshama. Maybe they helped somebody else to have a refuah. Your tefillahs created a power. What that power did, we weren't zochah to do what we wanted it to do, but it definitely didn't go for waste. It did something. You maybe never know what it did, but it did something. So too, the Maral Diskin says, the reason the Rebbeim Shem didn't stop Avraham Avinu from davening, even though he knew it was futile, is because those tefillahs Klal Yisrael needed for all generations. And when Avraham Avinu created the reservoir of power from those tefillahs, we're benefiting from even until today. Didn't help for Sodom, but the tefillahs are a power in the world, and that power we benefit from. Second idea, Avraham Avinu's tefillah was not to save Sodom. It was a given thing. It was a done thing. God decided to destroy Sodom. He obviously knew all the details. But Avraham Avinu had to understand why. What would have been had there been 50 tzaddikim? Are you destroying them despite the fact that there are 50 tzaddikim, but because there are 50 tzaddikim? And what about 40? So there's an inyan of nasa, of accepting what the Rabbanu Shalom does without questioning it. But once you accept it without questioning it, there's an inyan of understanding it, nishma. I want to understand Rabbanu Shalom so I can understand what the Darche Hashem are. I'd like to understand under what circumstances are you destroying them. Had there been 50, would you have destroyed them? He wasn't trying to bargain with the Rabbanu Shalom. He was trying to, after the fact, understand what was going on. That's very important. Moshe Rabbeinu, we'll get to Parshas Shmos, I'll tell you it again by Moshe Rabbeinu. But in any case, there's a nasa, there's doing the mitzvah unquestioning, and once you do it unquestioning, there's an idea of understanding as much as you can. The Rabbanu Shalom wants you to understand it. You don't understand it in order to do it. I accept that this is justice, but I'd like to understand why. I don't need to understand to think that it's justice. I think it's justice whether I understand it or not. But as much as I can understand, it's a mitzvah to understand. That's what Avraham Avinu, his tefillah wasn't to change the situation, but to understand what the parameters of the situation were so he would understand how God functions. That's the idea.